Welcome to the Evolving Advisor Podcast, dedicated to equipping independent financial advisors with the tips, insights, and knowledge to help you achieve success in business and life. Host Jeff Concepcion shares 30 years of experience as an advisor, entrepreneur, and CEO. Join Jeff and the industry's top thought leaders as they help you evolve from where you are today to where you want to be tomorrow. Now here's your host, Jeff Concepcion.
Hi, this is Jeff Concepcion, and welcome to the Evolving Advisor Podcast. Today, I happen to have two of my business partners joining and interested in picking their brains and hearing some thoughts a little bit about not only 2020, which has just concluded, but also their thoughts about the industry and the space and independence. So joining me today is Charles Shapiro. Charles is the Chief Development Officer for Stratus Wealth Partners. He also serves on Stratus's Executive Committee. He also runs a successful planning practice with a partner out on the West Coast. Charles is responsible for the hiring, development, and coaching of the firm's expanding, growing number of advisors across the country, working with a team of business development officers across the United States. One of our most prolific business development officers, and actually the person who introduced me to Charles early on in our partnership, is Chris Walling. Chris Walling is a founding partner and a brother just south of me here in Columbus, Ohio. Chris manages offices throughout Columbus, Cincinnati, Indiana, and has helped us really develop overall, frankly, our strategy across the Midwest. So Chris and Charles, it's great having you guys on board today. And I'll start off by thanking you guys for the great contributions both of you have made to help us grow the business. So it's great to have you on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
So as 2020, it's great to have you. So as 2020 has essentially concluded, I don't know if each of you guys has any reflections. I think it's been a pretty solid business year, but certainly a different one. One of the ways it jumped out at me as being different is when we looked at our T&E spend across the country with give or take 10 folks on the team that you guys sit on, and all the travel and all the businesses we're interacting with across 30 or 35 states. We really haven't gotten around a lot this year. Charles, why don't you take a moment and talk about this year and what's sort of been a little bit unique in terms of what we've done and how we've done it.
Yeah, I think everybody has had to sort of pivot and change the dynamic of how they interact with both new clients or new prospects or recruits if you're, trying to attract talent to your organizations. And I think that, most people have adopted well into this new dynamic of Zoom and WebEx and the lack of personal contact. But I will say that there's probably something missing from those interactions that I don't think the interpersonal connections that you make over breakfast, lunch, or dinner can be replaced. But I sat at my Thanksgiving table and told my kids that I was really happy for COVID. They looked at me like I had three heads, and my guess is I probably was shooting from the hip a little bit. I just said that it gave us perspective this year and made us really more appreciative of the things we have, even if it's school or work or a good meal out. So that's my two cents on that, Jeff.
Chris, what are your thoughts, either personally or professionally? I mean, again, this year has been pretty unique. On a personal front, I had a very, very close family member who was ill, who passed. And, when you think about all the impacts this has about how we interact with people day to day, how we shop, how we travel. I know lots of, folks have loved ones in nursing homes. I had somebody in a hospital, and the fact that you even can't go in, I mean, it's had an impact across, again, many industries, and including ours, and also people from a personal perspective in many ways. What are some of your reflections on 2020?
Yeah, we had a big challenge because obviously we have a fairly large family, and one of my daughters has a heart condition, so we had to be careful with connections and who we were seeing throughout the year. But we were fortunate to kind of get out of town early on and get some warm weather to keep her healthy. But what I think is fascinating is Charles and I both started in the business back in the early 90s, is that back then we used the phone to develop relationships, and we were in the office all day long on the phone. So this environment was interesting because it kind of took us back to where we were back in the 90s using the phone and talking to folks on the phone, not as many face-to-face meetings. So it wasn't really complicated for us to get in touch with clients. And I think with technology like Zoom and WebEx and other, you know, type of technologies, it allowed us to connect. We just didn't have that physical personal connection, which I think will come back soon. But that to me has been the most interesting dynamic, is how you just have to manage your time and be careful of all the loved ones around you.
No, that makes sense. And I think, you know, one of the things that's interesting is when you think about business development and, you know, the nature of the dialogue and the conversations we're having with people who are either business owners and looking maybe for more supported independence like we offer, or folks who are in the employee model. So Chris, when you think about things from a business development standpoint, and, you know, we look at how we've reacted as a firm to COVID and you know, some of the things that we've done relative to our employees, but our advisors, our partners, they're all business owners, and they're really kind of controlling their own dynamic, because I think you see a very broad spectrum. Some people who are isolating, you know, tremendously in their personal and business lives, other folks who are acting as if nothing happened, and then everything in between. So when you think about business development and a lot of the folks in employee models, wirehouses and banks, what are you hearing from some of the candidates, and how might this be impacting their view of their current world and maybe their view of independence?
I think there's two components. One is the wirehouse and the banks. The banks is very interesting. A lot of them aren't allowed to go to the office, and a lot of them aren't allowed to meet with clients. And therefore, there is no walk in traffic to the banks. So the referrals that they get are very limited. So I think they're taking a hard look at, you know, what's the value? Maybe I want to look at independence. On the wirehouse side, you've seen a lot of transitions from wirehouse to wirehouse just because of, you know, the environment of the markets being pretty good and the valuations being pretty high. So there's been a lot of, you know, money flow back and forth among different firms. But in general, the wirehouse advisors who give up a large percentage of their revenue to their organization are also asking that same question. Maybe I want to look at independence and get some of the resources from firms like Stratus that are available to me and build a higher practice, a little more diverse practice, and also build an equity value that's a little bit higher than they can get from a W-2 model. And also with the lack of, you know, traveling and expenses, they're usually getting some kind of value from an expense account, which they're not using either. Therefore, that's just money that's kind of going to waste for them. So it's, yeah, definitely an interesting dynamic.
Anything to add to that, Charles?
No, I think that, you know, folks are starting to dissect the P&L and their own personal P&Ls a little bit, you know, more closely. And I think that when you look at what, you know, you might pay 60 cents plus on the dollar to your wirehouse or bank, you know, whether or not you're really getting the same value you did, you know, maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago or longer. And I think people are starting to realize that, you know, they could sort of redistribute those resources to help themselves grow their business faster.
Yeah,
and that's probably why we've been so successful.
Yeah, I think that division of the pie is an interesting concept, right? Because I think there's really only been one major wirehouse to date that sort of recognized the evolution of an advisor, recognizing that to the extent that people need less and are less reliant, that there's a way that they could evolve inside of the firm and still remain with more autonomy and more revenue. The others really have talked about it, but I don't know if there's been a ton of movement there yet. So talk a little bit about the W-2, you know, employee model, what some of the attributes are. And I think Chris was just alluding to that, expense accounts and ways to support the business. What were some of the more relevant aspects of that, and what sort of remains relevant for people in that channel today as a benefit of being in an employee model?
Yeah, I think, you know, from my perspective, you know, one of the things that people really enjoyed about the employee model is that they, you know, got trained there, right? There was an infrastructure for training and development. It sort of taught you how to start the business. And, you know, I think that the infrastructure around products and delivery of planning and the tools, it was sort of a one-stop shop. You didn't have to recreate the wheel because the wheel was being delivered to you based on the way the firm felt the business was going. So I think, you know, if you look at some of the institutional sides of the business, whether it be syndicate and investment banking and some of those things, I think for the for the average retail advisor, it's really been dumbed down and gotten de minimis to their business. The impacts of those other business lines, even research to some extent. You can get great research just about anywhere, and you don't need a firm's research to be successful per se, because you can outsource that to a number of different resources. So, you look at that piece, that's the sort of during your employment. And then as you get a little bit later in your career, you think about how to monetize your, great practice that you've built. And I think that people are starting to realize that the 100-150 percent of your trailing 12 at ordinary income rates paid out over 5 years, and you have to stop working immediately and can't go into the office even one day a week, I think that that's not really what advisors want these days. So that's just a couple small changes that I think have happened in the last decade.
Yeah, that reminds me of a spreadsheet. And I remember I created this spreadsheet for a wirehouse team in the Southeast. And we always think about how to articulate the advantages of independence. And it's pretty obvious, right, that you have more control from a tax standpoint. Obviously, the payouts go up significantly. And obviously the multiples when someone exits are more favorable, the tax treatment is more favorable, but how do you capture that? And I remember creating this one sheet that we've used subsequently, and frankly, I don't know that we use it enough. And I called it the cost of complacency. So these advisors were in their late 40s. They said, assume that we work until 60. So over a dozen years, the spread in compensation and benefits of what they would earn remaining at a wirehouse, and then versus what they would earn independently, the formula of how the practice was valued in the wirehouse versus how it was valued independently, and then how much of that they could keep when they monetized, because of taxes. A lot of our transactions are capital gains versus theirs, which are all ordinary income. But you mentioned something else too, it's the flexibility. So the ability for the advisor potentially to stay on for a number of years and work and consult and all that being very bespoke and custom deal to deal. So there clearly are lots of advantages. I think that's one of the things that's helped catalyze our growth, really, is not only the economic gains, but some of the flexibility. As you guys have seen a lot of people transition from wire and bank models, you guys still to date have spent considerably more time in that space than you have in this space. So Chris, talk a little bit about what your experience has been. I think most advisors know that when they cross that bridge, assuming they can cross it favorably with moving what they had previously in their book over, things are going to be good. But what are some of the fears that advisors have? What are some pieces of advice that you would give to folks who are considering independence? Just talk a little bit from what your experience has shown you.
Yeah, I think most of the transitions, the advisors are fairly surprised at how supportive their clients are of the move. And when you kind of break down, the organizations we're part of, the multi-custodial approach, the fact that we have more services and products that we can offer the clients at a lot lower cost, there's a lot more flexibility, and then we can do a little bit better job on the planning side because we can bring in outside parties to consult and facilitate on behalf of the clients. It works out pretty well. The challenge, we had an advisor transition right in the heart of COVID this year from Merrill Lynch, and the challenge was really getting together with those clients to do the paperwork and to discuss, who is Stratus, who are our custodians, and things like that. So that was a very difficult transition just from a standpoint of getting together, but he did a phenomenal job and got all of his clients on board, and his clients were just really, really happy that he was doing this, that he was doing something outside the box, that he was going to be able to bring a different level of service and products and planning to them to help with their overall financial picture, and also really removed the conflicts of interest that you see throughout the industry, not being part of a asset management firm, not being part of an investment bank, not being part of a regular bank and having to have certain goals and objectives for loans and deposits and things like that. I think clients really like to see that we're truly just giving financial planning advice. And that's where our advisors are having a lot of success in their conversations and transition.
Yeah, I think the other misconception too is that on an independent platform, you're not going to have the capabilities that you had at a big firm, at a wirehouse or bank, or you're not going to have access to the product, or you're not going to have access to lending, or you're not going to have access to the tools. And, in some respects, at a point in time, that was probably true. But I think with evolution, it becomes less and less and less true. I almost feel now that I could argue that the advisors got the capacity to do more things in more ways with more clients because of the open architecture. Charles, why don't you talk about that? You were kind of a substantial influence in our expansion to adding on custodians and relationships with some of the large firms that we bought research with and could even access product through. So talk a little bit about maybe the mindset of, I probably can't really run a sophisticated practice independently, and maybe what that means today with the way independent platforms have evolved.
Yeah, it's interesting. Be careful what you wish for is an old theme. And, when you think about how simple the W-2 model is, at one custodian, one trading desk, one margin rate, one branch manager, one compliance department, all of that, is all well and good. The challenge is it doesn't create any competitiveness and it doesn't create any optionality. So, when we started Stratus, the thought of creating a very complex beast of a firm was not something on our high list, because we wanted to create something that had a lot of value that we could really deliver in a very efficient way. The challenge is that our advisors and their clients want that optionality. And if you think about the broker dealer, we partnered with LPL, the great custodians that clients love and know and understand, whether that be Fidelity, whether that be Schwab, whether that be TD Ameritrade or Pershing, creating the optionality where these firms compete for your client, which is our advisor, and their client's business, I think has proven to be a wonderful little mix of doing what's right for clients and being able to tap the resources of all these firms. And everybody does a little bit different. And everybody has, their own sort of skill set as a firm. And I think being able to get sort of the best and be able to deliver it to your client has been a huge home run for most of our advisors, and something that's probably not appreciated as much by somebody who's sitting in a sort of a one-stop shop place.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, kind of the pieces and parts, right? And I think about some of the things that we sort of back in the early days were good at, and maybe other places where it seemed like there might be less access than there could be in a big firm. And then I look at some of the relationships we've struck up with firms like Wells Fargo or JP Morgan to access certain types of products. And some of these lenders that have been incredibly competitive on the collateralized lending side, our partnership with Emigrant and some of the unique stuff that allows us to do now, not only on the lending side, but on the trust side. And then you talk about all the custodians and the different places that assets can be held. So when I talk to advisors about independence and really seizing all the opportunities that are out there, a kind of a little analogy I use is kind of puddle pond ocean, right? So you're talking to an advisor that might be coming from a small independent broker dealer, or frankly, for that matter, even from a wirehouse. That wirehouse to me represents kind of a closed sandbox to an extent. There are only certain things you can do and certain ways that they can be done. And the bureaucracy around the rules and regulations and how those things take place is very different. Clearly in the independent world, we have lots of rules and lots of regulations, but the sandbox seems to be more expansive and seems to be open to be being sort of redesigned or rethought. And I think when you think about that ocean, there really aren't custodians or technologies or tools that we wouldn't have the ability to access or that advisors wouldn't. It's really an open architecture environment. Wondering what thoughts you guys have about how you share that in conversation with advisors and how that becomes part of the storyline that you tell folks who are thinking about independence.
So Jeff, it's Chris. I think when you talk about that concept, a lot of it plays into succession planning. So we've got a number of conversations with advisors where they're looking for a succession plan. They don't have a succession plan. When you have the ability to offer them a succession plan from multi-custodians, it makes it a lot easier for them to transition. They don't have to go through the process of selling their book or moving to a different broker dealer or a different firm at some point. So that's one component. And then the other side is there's a lot of advisors who want to buy a practice. And when they're with a larger firm like ours, where we have access to multiple custodians, they have a lot more ability to purchase those practices. So you've got 18,000 advisors at LPL and a lot at TD and Fidelity and Schwab, they're all independent advisors that all need a succession plan. So it opens up the opportunity for acquisition as well as for selling your practice back to a firm like Stratus when you retire, decide to step back a little bit. So you don't have to go out and sell the book to another organization over 10 years on a, you know, taxable situation. So a lot of different opportunities there.
Yeah. So I guess one quick question, Charles, I'm interested in your thoughts. So when we started the shop, right at the very beginning, it seemed very obvious to me that this was a landing pad for folks who wanted to go independent, have more control, more autonomy. And when I say more control and autonomy, I think the beauty of supported independence, which is really how I would describe us, is that most advisors don't leave the shops that they're with because they're super interested in billing or HR or compliance or real estate or tech support or, you know, any of these other things. Autonomy and independence mean something entirely different to them. Unfortunately, they find out there are lots of other hats that they have to wear. What I probably contemplated less when we set up our shop is how many folks would have already gone independent and really been interested in more of a supported independence because of all the noise and all those other hats that they had to wear. And maybe just talk about from your experience and just what you've seen across the enterprise. I think nearly a third of our folks have come from independent platforms where they were seeking some additional support. What are any thoughts you'd have to share on that topic?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think, you know, folks that are independent aren't necessarily folks that want to be on an island alone, right? They still might want to be part of something bigger than themselves. They just want to be independent from being told what to do from the client perspective, told what to sell from a firm perspective. And they want to be able to allocate their funds and deploy them for either inorganic or organic growth the way they chose. So I kind of think of two different practices that have come from independence, you know, one in Utah, one out here in California, that sort of reminds me of the of some of the reasons. You know, one very, very substantial practice in Utah, you know, they weren't an independent shop, but they wanted a partnership around business development, right? They wanted a partnership around acquisition strategy. They wanted somebody to sit on their side of the table and help them do deals, whether it be through lead flow, whether it be through valuation, whether it be through helping with the financing, whether it be execution, transition support from a standpoint of repapering. They knew that that was not something that was, you know, their skill set, but they wanted to take their practice to the next level. And they felt that our partnership was worth the few points that they'd give up in that realm. And the other was just a single practitioner out in California who was already independent, but was interested in, you know, going and breaking into a new business, which was the participant advice business at the custodians like Schwab and Fidelity. They were at a, you know, a good independent shop, but didn't have access to the multiple custodial platform and the ability to advise clients and allocate on their behalf in their 401ks prior to retirement without having to do an in-service rollover. And that advisor, you know, has grown a $100 million business from scratch just under, you know, our partnership because of the access that we gave.
Yeah, so that's super helpful. So I guess maybe just as we conclude, what sort of sage advice might you share to folks that are running independent practices today that are sitting in employee or wire models as they think about independence? And you guys have seen a lot of success stories. You've seen a lot of folks not only come over, but, you know, when I think about this, I mean, we have an advisor with us in the Southeast, and he came over from a bank. He was doing a million and change in production. I think he transitioned really well, considering that he was coming from a true bank, which is really the most challenging to move clients from. He moved probably 70 or 75% of his assets over. He grew organically. He's had two tuck-ins and purchased two books. He's now doing well north of 2 million. With his eyes on another nice transition that will take him to north of 3 million in production. So there are lots of great stories like that. So advisors who are contemplating, what piece of parting advice would you share with them as they think about kind of where they are and maybe where they'd like to be at some point in the future?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely the first thing is it's not all about the payout. You have to look at all the resources available and then also look at all the resources available through the organization like Astratus and take advantage of those resources. Because I think firms like ours, we built the organization to help people grow their business and be more efficient. And that is the key. If you can take advantage of those opportunities from, you know, all the resources we have in technology to platform, to product, to partnerships, to training, to development, that's really the value. It's not about that top line payout. It's about what you get on the bottom line, as well as a compliance team that can help you through difficult times. I don't think any independent advisor would want to be alone when it comes to an audit, either with FINRA or the SEC. And I think it's nice to have the partnership with the compliance team that can help you navigate challenges going forward. So definitely use the resources and don't just look at the payout.
Charles, how about yourself?
So with regards to you know, this discussion, I think that what's easy isn't necessarily what's best. I mean, a lot of people who, you know, are thinking or contemplating going independent, they think about all the things there is to, you know, to the business and how they're going to be able to tackle those things if they don't have the knowledge base or taking themselves out of the comfort zone of what they've, you know, been used to for 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years. And I would argue that what we've seen from most advisors that, you know, go into private practice is that they reinvent themselves. They realize that that there's a new start. They shed old habits. They shed old clients that weren't doing their practice any benefit or making the hair on the back of their neck stand up when that phone number comes in. And they decide that they want to take their business to the next level. And I think that the one thing that most every Astratus advisor at least has in common, I don't care if they do 200,000 in revenue or 4 million in revenue, it's a desire to grow. And entrepreneurship in its essence is cultivated here. And I think, you know, that's the one thing that most everybody has in common. And the fact that, you know, they want to be part of something bigger than themselves, that being independent does not mean being alone.
Yeah, super helpful, guys. I really appreciate the commentary. Congrats to both of you. I know you've helped a lot of advisors in the last 10 years create their own independent businesses that they've dreamed about for a long time. So I know they appreciate the role that you guys have played, as do I. So it's time for my favorite part of the podcast karaoke. I know you guys are going to be singing one of your favorite Beatles songs. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
They want a revolution.
Well, you know,
we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution.
Well, you know,
we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
Don't you know it's gonna be
alright?
Alright.
Alright. See you later. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to The Evolving Advisor. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe and share it with your colleagues. And if you would like to talk about succession planning or practice acquisitions, please drop us a line. We would love to help you in any way we can.